I've been involved in the criminal justice system in one form or another since I was a juvenile. I've been on some form of supervision, probation or parole, since I was 14 years old.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Rebecca Smith. Mataka Askari lives in Colombia with his family, working as a certified peer specialist for those dealing with substance use disorders, and is actively trying to use his experiences to help others. Those experiences include spending 23 and a half years in prison. He's now been out of prison for approximately 18 months. In this special from Missouri Health Talks in the KBIA newsroom, Mataka reflects on his childhood and his personal growth during those many years in prison.
So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I came up in a community that was primarily impoverished, and there was drug activity and violence. Even though, like, it in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't as escalated as it was in the 90s. So growing up, I really didn't understand that I was poor until I got a little older and was able to recognize it. And so by me having influences around me that offered an immediate reprieve to the poverty in the form of crime, naturally, instead of just working, waiting, when you need something right now, right, the last thing you're thinking about is, let me go fill out this job application so that I can work a couple of weeks and then the check come. You have situations when you're impoverished that need immediate addressing: bills, food, clothing. And so a lot of times when people don't have the resources and they don't have the time to be able to fill out applications and wait for jobs, they take advantage of whatever opportunities are in the community. Crime, whether it's robbery, whether it's stealing, whether it's selling drugs, or whatever it is that they need to do in order to make ends meet. I have never had an opportunity to live outside of those influences. And so in February of 1995, I started a 30-year sentence for the illegal distribution and manufacturing of a controlled substance, selling cocaine. The thing is, in the 90s, when the drug epidemic hit the inner city communities, it was a criminal justice issue. Now that the opioids and methamphetamines are starting to impact other areas, it's a mental health issue. So they need to go back and start applying today's understanding, retroactivate the understanding, and start to free some of those guys who struggle with substance use disorder and who still are in prison and languish in jails across America for the things that people are getting treatment for today. This current episode, a manifestation of opioids, did not start with heroin in the streets. It started in the medicine cabinets of suburban America. That's where it started, from doctors prescribing opiates and children reaching in the medicine cabinets recreationally and then starting to develop a dependency on it. I started my prison sentence at the old Jefferson City Correctional Center, Missouri State Penitentiary, the one that's closed down now that they do the tours on. So while I was in prison, I remember vividly the incident that started to shift my course of thinking. And so they don't have doors, they had bars. And I was on the top walk, they called it 8 walk, and the bottom walk, the first floor, is called the flag. So imagine there are open cells, 4 tiers up, with men screaming and hollering all night. So naturally, being in a situation that I didn't want to be in, I had relied on my traditional coping mechanisms, which was drugs and alcohol, right? So while I was there, me and my cellie was smoking a little weed, drinking some homemade wine, and I'm listening. And I'm hearing these guys screaming and hollering and laughing and playing. And these guys have been locked up 10, 15, 20 years. And I said to myself, do I want to be like that 20 years from now? And I didn't. That was my epiphany, right? I didn't say the fullness of the transformation, right, did not take place then, but that started me turning the corner. And so once I started turning the corner, naturally I start asking questions. And a guy introduced me to the autobiography of Malcolm X. It changed my life forever. So here was a guy like me in the streets, hustling, using drugs and alcohol as coping mechanisms, right? Went to prison and started to learn some stuff that counteracted those things that he had been conditioned to believe. And so he freed himself from imprisoning ideologies that stopped him from realizing his potential. And I identified with that. And so I studied that autobiography of Malcolm X. And Malcolm X reversed the way I thought by saying, okay, listen, study this. You've been taught wrong. Like, your people are not savages. They didn't come from a dark continent where they were running around with bones in their noses and spears. When we study the history, you can look at the four West African empires of Mali, Ghana, Songhe, Kanem, Bornu. You can look at certain Kemetic or Egyptian societies, and you can see, right, how your people have contributed things to society, and you come from that lineage. So their greatness is genetically stored in you. And when I started to understand that, and I started to study, it empowered me with information. And it was through that power that I found the strength to redefine myself and overcome some of the things that had prevented me from being the best me. So I became like a bibliophile. Like, I studied those books. I mean, studied. And so I used to go out and we call it the cipher, the circle. And we used to talk about the information, right, that we studied to make sure we had clear understandings, to metaphorize it, to make sure we understood it properly. It was through those building experiences, right, that I also was able to develop an understanding that further empowered me. And I understood, right, that if this helped me, it would help another person. And so I use this example all the time. If I was a marine biologist and you brought me a fish, right, that was dead, and you say, I don't know what happened to this fish. I dissect the fish. I see the fish died, but I really cannot accurately understand what it died for. And you continue to bring me fish from this area. Sooner or later, I'm going to have to test the water that the fish swimming in. The environment. And I understood that a lot of my friends who I grew up with were all in this same situation. The toxicity of the environment, the poverty. Poverty breeds despair. Despair breeds criminality. And so poverty, the unhealthy images that we have internalized, a lot of people, especially young black men, do not want to accept the fact that there is this sense of self-worth that is based on concepts and ideas that have been set up by other people. And we strive to meet that. And anytime we fail to meet that, it impacts how we feel and think about ourselves. This plays into our self-esteem, and it starts to erect these barriers of I can't. And if you don't believe that you're capable of something, you can't even utilize your internal resources to summon the inspiration to try to tackle a thing. And so a lot of people are really defeated before they have an opportunity to try.
You can find this and more from Mataka at kbia.org. Our music is by Benjamin Banger, and this piece was reported and produced by me. From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Rebecca Smith.